Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday. The real Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. Eric the Tech, it is Tuesday today, not Monday, Tuesday. How are you, Eric?
Doing good.
All right. Yeah. You know what? A lot of emails and a lot of letters saying, hey, you know, you've got to talk more on the show. You won't show your face, but you got to talk more. So just passing it along to you. A lot of information to get into for first hour. Hour one, some pretty large, things that are happening right now make sense if you look at them through a bigger lens, a wider lens. They make sense. Of course, yesterday, the blackout of Facebook and Instagram, all right, and other outlets there, connected outlets. And more importantly, I think, than the blackout, well, equally important to the blackout is the lack of acknowledgement by, at least in the first couple of hours, by the mainstream media. Why is that? Why? You've got to ask yourself why. All right? Because I'm going to tell you why. It's all about the bigger picture here. And it all of this goes back to something I wrote back in 2013. And I want to start off with this, folks. Some of you longtime listeners and viewers will remember this. Others new to the show obviously won't or may not. You may have seen it in passing. I think Glenn Beck had read this on air. If not, he referenced it. This was published on April 1st of 2013. It wasn't an April Fool's joke, but it was published on that day at Canada Free Press. No, I'm sorry. It was March 31st, not April 1st. 2013. That was a Sunday, and then April 1st it went viral. There it is on your screen. This was published after I spent some time in Washington D.C. and in March of 2013, and I met with someone who gave me some information at that time, and the information was very simple. The Obama administration, their agenda is to kill the U.S. dollar. And that confused me at the time, and I had to be walked through this, and subsequently I walked the reader through this, the information that I was given. And then somebody, a YouTuber out there, a Snortster, had narrated this article. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start out with this because this all connects together. The coronavirus, the SARS-CoV-2, Chinese Communist Party virus, or the Anglo-Asian virus, the globalist virus. We probably should start calling it the globalist virus and the globalist response, right? This connects to what's happening with China and Taiwan, China, South China Sea, China, Japan, China, Russia. How about the shipping containers, both coasts, being hung up? The supply chain problems. And the mega gazillion dollar, well, actually 3.5 trillion plus 1.2 trillion, the budget reconciliation bill and the...
Who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting, right? So you want to write a check for, like, you know... just the interest alone on that, by the way, would be... trillions per year.
Well, let's just tax the wealthy more.
Let's do that.
That'll cover what, 3% of it?
How does that work, folks? The recent release of the Pandora Papers, I found it very interesting. One of the countries not represented on the Pandora Papers is the United States. Well, now, why is that? Because of the way the Federal Reserve System in the United States is set up to have the ability, Eric the Tech, where they can the rich, the wealthy in the United States can set up shell companies and hide behind corporations and stuff. I mean, look, it's an exploitation of capitalism. However, no.
That's what we do.
Yeah, of course. We hide our millions and billions and trillions of dollars. We shuck and jive with corporations, right? I mean, that's what, yeah. Right. Okay. Boy, it's hard to keep track of all the money. So, all the shell corporations. But the point is, the Pandora Papers, the representation of who's hiding their money in tax havens and behind tax shelters, if you will, or offshore accounts, are the globalists, are the very people who are making the rules for us, all of us, the unwashed masses. But to what end? And what does this have to do? You mentioned Facebook, this blackout of Facebook being down and Instagram being down. And what does that have to do with anything? Well, the cracks, the seams are starting to show in the globalist agenda. Now, I want to go back, as I said, I want to go back to 2013 and follow me on this, please. March 31st, 2013. And the link to the YouTube channel will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. Two ends on Hagman. I'd like you to take a look and listen to this. If you're driving again, just listen artfully, beautifully narrated by this person. But listen to this. This is really just a reading of my article from March 31st, 2013. And on the other side of this, we're going to discuss this and what this has to do with what we're seeing today. So go ahead and play clip one.
Some might be surprised to learn that the fate of America's economy has already been determined, verified, and announced by the Obama White House. Yet, it has received scant attention from the corporate media. In 2011, economist Kyle Bass interviewed a senior member of the Obama administration about its planned solutions for fixing the U.S. economy in trade deficit. Among the questions he asked was about the U.S. exports and wages, but the question itself was not nearly as important as the response he received from this senior administration official. In fact, this single seven-word response clarifies everything, explains everything, and leaves little else to discuss. We're just going to kill the dollar. There it is, the entire agenda in one short sentence. It explains everything we've been seeing domestically and globally. That one statement makes every other question irrelevant, or otherwise answers all economic questions and explains everything. Nothing else matters. I urge you to ponder that statement and all it implies. Doing so will provide you with the clarity to understand not only what is taking place today, but what is yet to come. It is important to note the specificity of the word kill. Stated in the active voice, it means an unambiguously intentional and deliberate act. The murder of our national currency, the United States dollar, is the ultimate agenda to be implemented under Obama. To kill our national currency will subvert the United States and destroy it from within. This begs a number of questions, including what type of Americans would actually have, as their objective, the destruction of our national currency. To whom do they hold their allegiance, if not to the American people, whose life's work as well as the toil of our ancestors is represented in the form of wealth held in U.S. dollars? Does this make any sense to us as Americans? The answer is, of course, no. By its very definition, to kill our national currency is an act of high treason by those engaged in this activity. It undermines the very sovereignty and survival of our nation and will have a life-changing impact on every citizen in the U.S. It will also impact every nation and the people of every nation on the planet, as the U.S. dollar is presently the world's reserve currency. It is an act that should result in the filing of criminal charges against the conspirators, a trial of their peers, and if convicted, a death sentence. It's that serious. According to my source, we are past the point of no return. We will not be able to stop what is coming, but must be wise enough to prepare and get out of the way. The murder plot involving the death of the dollar did not begin with Obama, but he and other conspirators have accelerated the plans, plots, and schemes for its demise. The ultimate objective is to implement an international currency in tandem with a system of global governance. The problem is that most people are not thinking large enough, nor do they understand the magnitude of the lie. They are not seeing the larger picture as their focus is diverted elsewhere. For example, they focus on various tentacles of the octopus, such as the gun confiscation initiative, the DHS armament acquisitions, and economic woes as independent and unrelated events. They are not. Meanwhile, others continue to adhere to or even perpetuate the dual-party meme of governance, holding dearly to the notion that there is a practical difference between the Republican and Democratic parties. Have we not seen sufficient evidence that they are now of one party acting in concert with each other? They cannot see the collusion and backroom deals and continue to hope that the next election will finally change the unchangeable continuity of agenda. Most of the elected officials are on board with the subjugation of the United States to a global system of governance. Some are actively facilitating this agenda, while others are making nominal objections on the stage of political theater, whilst hoping to earn a seat at the global table. It's entertainment for the globalists, distraction of the masses, and diversionary fodder for the talking heads in the media. America has become a captured operation, captured from within. Think of the Vichy French internal collaboration with the enemy, or softening the ground for a full takeover from within. The takeover of America has already happened. The collaborators have already been installed, and we are now on a path to complete subjugation of a larger global system of governance. If you continue to doubt this, how else would you explain the numerous examples of our dual-party governmental acquiescence of self-destruction? Those who are pleased about the new record-setting stock market highs and various other manipulated statistics that indicate our economy is improving will be the most vocal critics of this report, and who will attempt to discredit the validity of the information offered here. The more intellectually astute will look beyond the statistics offered for mass consumption, not only to identify the deliberately manipulated data, but to understand what is actually driving these false hopes, figures, and data. It is a magic show, and many are still captivated by the magician's many diversions, failing to realize that we are engaged in a global war, while being simultaneously hobbled by enemy infiltrators from within. One reason we are seeing new stock market highs is the rush to the dollar from other currencies, especially in the Eurozone. Another reason is the monetization of our debt by the Federal Reserve, despite the previous denials of Ben Bernanke and others. Simply put, the plan by the globalists or the central bankers and those behind them is to create this rush to the US dollar like passengers from a sinking ship to lifeboats. Once the lifeboats are filled to capacity, they will be sunk, and the United States dollar will be completely worthless. As in such a scenario, many will not make it. Many will die from what is coming. The level of evil behind this plan is incomprehensible to the normal human mind. We are at war with Russia. After removing Gaddafi from power in Libya, the Obama-Clinton Black Ops plan was immediately put into action. Benghazi was the logistics hub for arming the anti-Assad terrorists by our own State Department, covert operatives who were shipping millions of tons of weapons to Syria via Turkey and other staging areas. Russia was aware of our actions, and through the attack at the CIA Operations Center in Benghazi by proxy forces, exposed this operation to the world while putting a stop to this operation. It seems that everyone except the Western media reported what had taken place. the dirty little secret which explains why we have not been told the truth about Benghazi is quite simple. The efforts to overthrow Assad from power are continuing, except the arms and munitions shipments are now originating primarily out of Croatia. Overthrowing Assad would pose a direct threat to Russia, both militarily and economically. Are we to expect Russia's Putin to simply accept this without response? No. What is Russia doing to subvert our efforts? Is waging war against America, striking at the weak underbelly of our economy, which is the oil-backed dollar as identified in Michael Reagan's article, Building on a Kernel of Truth. Sadly, the Obama regime is doing nothing to protect us from this asymmetrical war. It's as if they are allowing it to take place. Although it was reported in the New York Times, few have paid attention to last week's meeting between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. But it was an extremely important event in terms of the planned murder of the US dollar. An alliance is being forged between Russia and China to replace the US dollar as the reserve currency, already severely weakened by the policies of those in power, with a gold-backed currency. While reports do exist that cite the hoarding of gold by China and Russia, they are purposely underreporting their collective reserves. Meanwhile, Americans can't even get honest answers to the amounts of our own gold reserves held in Fort Knox or the Federal Reserve. Don't people find this reluctance for audit and inspection a bit curious, if not outright suspicious? The battle is being waged not only by military might, but by a currency war. We are being played through our military involvement in the Middle East, including our covert operations against Syria at the behest of Saudi Arabia. Unlike Iraq, the war in Syria will explode, turn hot, and we will be engaged in an ominous battle that will quickly expand and turn deadly. Weakened militarily through the policies of the Obama regime, coupled with an already weakened economy, the U.S. will suffer consequences unlike anyone might imagine or is willing to address. It is a recipe for disaster, planned and initiated by the global elite behind the central banking system, including those in our own government, who've been set up from within, lied to, and now we're about to see exactly what this globalist system has in store for not only the United States, but every nation of the world. It is critical to understand that the takedown of the U.S. will be the result of an asymmetrical war that includes the weakening of our military, our economy, and a direct assault on our ability to keep the dollar as the world reserve currency and protect the free flow of oil and energy to the United States. Within the last week, China held a surprise naval exercise in the South China Sea. Meanwhile, Russia displayed their resurgent military might in the Black Sea. These exercises were conducted as U.S. military forces are spread thinly across many areas of the world. Is anyone paying attention here? Just as certain a collapse of the dollar is coming, so will be chaos on the streets of America caused by this plan to kill the dollar. The central bankers and the leaders selected to govern each country have effectively used the Hegelian dialectic to implement their agenda. Just as stated by George H.W. Bush on September the 11th, 1990, their predetermined solution of a new world order is being formed before our very eyes. They've told us what they are doing, but we have chosen not to listen or failed to understand what was being said. The U.S. has always been the firewall against the globalists. By their persistence, infiltration of global elitists into our government, and covert subversion from within, we are being led to slaughter. A view from space, looking at the larger picture of events for which many have questions, a clearer picture emerges. There will be some who dare to resist the pillaging of our bank accounts, the erosion of our rights, and the enslavement that comes with the dismantling of America. The dust clouds visible on the far horizon that watchmen have been reporting for decades can now be seen as an attacking army of barbarians whose fighters are now on the ladders and cannons are breaching our empire's outer walls. Who knows how long the inner walls of our empire will survive the next wave of their coming attack? Perhaps Ernest Hemingway said it best in referencing John Donne from his novel of the same name. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
And there it is. I'd like to thank that YouTube channel. I don't know the YouTuber, Snorster. It's, the link will be in the program description box, but that was a reading of my article from March 31st of 2013. Now, you might say, well, a lot of the things that you said or wrote about haven't come to pass, specifically with respect to Syria. You were off on that. Now, as they say, the night is young. The year is young. I still believe that Syria is the powder keg in the Middle East. Now, you've got Iran, of course, and Israel. And Israel saying, hey, we're not going to allow Iran to become a nuclear power. And that's kind of at the that's kind of being prepped right now for conflict. And however, you've got this powder keg all across the Middle East. So go back in the Obama years and remember, as I like to bring into play here. Remember, during the Obama years, the Arab Spring. What happened there? That was an engineered event. That was not a spontaneous uprising. That was an engineered event, as was Benghazi, as was the change of leadership in Egypt. And you might be saying, well, this is history. I mean, again, this is all in history. What does that have to do with anything now? Because these changes are taking place now. The killing the dollar, although the attempt or the intent was back way back in 2011, 2012, 2013. The application is today. This is what we're seeing. This is the only way to explain events, because what is the objective here? The objective is a digital global currency. The objective is a digital mass surveillance state of subjugation of us. I cannot tell you strongly enough how everything is interconnected. When President Trump was elected in 2016, it put the brakes on Obama's third term. What are we seeing today? Some will argue today Joe Biden is Obama's third term. I would say, okay, to some extent that's true, but Obama is merely a puppet of the globalists, the people behind the globalists, actually, the 13, if you will, families that run the world, that own the world, and the overpopulated world, I might add. So how do you ensure, for example, how do you ensure that President Trump wouldn't continue, you know, with a second term, contiguous to his first, at least to the perception of the people? Well, you change the rules for voting. Well, how do you do that without a dust up? Well, you have a pandemic or a plandemic. And there, InfoWars just released a video from early 2019 or earlier in 2019, Fauci and others talking about this very thing, about releasing coronavirus pandemic. And I was going to play that, but you get the idea. Okay, so everything is interconnected, interwoven. The objective has always been and continues to be bringing the world, subjugating all of us to a global power structure. That's the big picture. That's the intent. And many people are waking up to that. Many people are now saying, wait, you know, it seems like there's a big push. I mean, how else would you explain the events that we're seeing? And I apologize, by the way, folks, I'm having some trouble. I've got to have some, again, surgery done on my mouth and my jaw. And so if I sound a little bit whistly, it's because of that. But getting back to getting back to today. In a, there was an article by Lloyd Billingsley published this morning in American Thinker. The title of the article is Biden's Bank Robber. Now, I'm going to draw you back into the United States now, not globally, but into the United States, because really the world's reserve currency is what? The U.S. dollar, or at least at the moment and on life support, right? So Joe Biden, his nominee for comptroller of the currency in the United States Treasury Department, is an individual by the name of Omar Ova, who's a native of the Kazakh Soviet Socialist Republic and a graduate of Moscow State University. There's the article on your screen right there. The link will be in the program description box. Now, he was interviewed back in May of last year on NBC, Chris Hayes. Omar revealed that she was in an exchange program with the University of Wisconsin in 1991 when the USSR collapsed, the Soviet Union collapsed. This Lenin scholar, again, Lenin scholar, remained stateside to pursue a PhD, a doctorate in political science. Now, some of her views on economics emerged back in 2019, 30 years after the USSR collapsed. Say what you will about the old Soviet Union, there was no gender pay gap there, she wrote. Market doesn't always know best. This is the nominee for comptroller of the currency for the U.S. Treasury Department. Writes Billingsley, economic knowledge is fragmented and dispersed, so no group of people is able to plan an economy that will thrive for the benefit of all. That's why Omarova's beloved Soviet Union, or old USSR, was an economic basket case. Remember what the United States did to the Soviet Union, to their economy, that ended up breaking or bringing down the Soviet Union. Do you remember? It was all economic. Not a shot was fired. It was all economic. Billingsley continues, countries barren of liberties are also barren of groceries. The biggest country in the world with abundant energy and natural resources could not even feed itself, referring to the Soviet Union at that time. This was a matter of record, but Hayes failed to press the issue. Chris Hayes, the interviewer. Omar Ova knew that in the old USSR, consumers waited in line to select, pay, and pick up the goods. Folks, give it a few months here, maybe several weeks, but this is coming. And writes Billingsley, that is how an economy planned by the Communist Party bosses functions in practice. But there's more to it. I'd like you to read this article because it provides a lot of great information and background. The Biden's nominee, an alum of Moscow State University, wants the Federal Reserve to control every American's money. This is all really a template from the communist USSR, where the government sets salaries in, I might add, in a gender-blind manner. And what are we hearing today, the pay gap between men and women and such? All right, so this is a very important article. I can't stress this enough. I would like you to read that article because this is exactly what's taking place today. The killing of the U.S. dollar to make way for a global currency, which will make way for a global governance. This is happening today. The problem with us Americans, and really many in the West, is we're not thinking big enough and we're not understanding the enormity of this agenda. There's a second article on American Thinker But there's many articles relative to the two bills that are, that make up the $4.5 trillion infrastructure and reconciliation package. Now, again, $4.5 trillion. You see how the left and really the Uniparty, they're pushing for passage of this. They got two holdouts, Manchin and Sinema. You see where Sinema was attacked, well, not attacked, but was harassed by individual Latinos or Hispanics, whatever you want to call them, followed into the restroom. You saw the video, right? Eric the Tech, did you see that video where she was followed into the restroom by a Hispanic woman who said, I couldn't even attend my... Did you see that video? Okay. Well, folks, you might have seen it. Certainly, you know, made all the news outlets. Okay, so she was also harassed on an airplane. Now, who funded or what's up with that? What's up with that harassment? Well, come to find out when you start looking at who, when you start looking at the individual and the individuals involved in this campaign of harassment. Guess what? There's money from George Soros, the master at killing economies. There's money from the Ford and Carnegie Foundations, I believe. I have to double check, but that's from memory. Funding the group that, I'll just use the word loosely, employed that female, that woman that you saw chasing Sinema into the bathroom. And actually recording her in the restroom and also on the aircraft. But getting back to the major part of this, the $4.5 trillion infrastructure and reconciliation bills are far more radical and dangerous than you think. Now, this is an article by Seth Grossman, American thinker, again, published today. The bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure in the progressive Democrat $3.5 trillion reconciliation packages were just obscenely bloated versions of previous stimulus spending that we had with Obama and Trump. This was what the author of this article thought. Well, upon closer scrutiny, both bills are far more radical and dangerous. They're sponsored by people who hate America, who hate America's large, prosperous, and politically independent middle class. Now, the premise of both bills is that by enjoying safe and comfortable lifestyles, we are causing floods and fires and droughts and ruining the planet. Just by our very existence, we're ruining the planet. You've heard this before, right? All right. So, folks, read this article as well in tandem with the other article. In the closing comments here, in this article, the left, Democrats, this point is as written in this article, carefully designed both massive spending packages to bribe every interest group they need to get elected and reelected next year. Their combined $4.5 trillion spending plan includes $18 billion for homeowners, $13.5 billion for vehicle charging stations, and so on. But this is ultimately, this is an assault on oil, gas, on our way of life, essentially our way of life. This is an assault on the middle class and the poor. I don't know how else to describe that. This is what these programs are designed to do. And in these bills are also penalties for non-compliance. And you got to pay attention to that. Why do you think Soros and these other globalist connected foundations are funneling money to have the two sole holdouts the two people that are stopping this, the passage of this, these for this $4.5 trillion package. Why do you think they're being targeted in the manner that they're being targeted? Why? They need this to pass. Why? Because the dollar cannot sustain this kind of, it would be, the dollar would not be sustainable. Our economy would not be sustainable. And this is the equivalent of the attack on the U.S. dollar. This would kill the U.S. dollar. This would absolutely kill the U.S. dollar. And you may say, well, we print more money. We can print more money. Really? Economics. Okay. So the bottom line here, folks, again, I can't stress this any harder, with any more vigor than I am. You've got to understand the push here is for a global digital currency. And the act of compliance, or the act to make you comply, is this vax passport, the digital vax passport. That's the method under which the surveillance of the digital currency and the inherent surveillance of, or built into the digital currency. So it's kind of a belt and suspenders approach to your and my and Eric the Tech's subjugation. The plan here is global domination and a global surveillance state right now. It's that important. I want to very quickly play clip number two. People are starting to wake up and realize, oh, and Facebook, why did it go down? How can explain to me how this could happen? Some will say, well, you know, of course, Facebook came out with an explanation, right? Well, interestingly, right after that 60 Minutes interview with the Facebook insider saying, hey, we're not censoring enough. We're not censoring enough. And I'm not going to go through the entire interview, but you've got to watch that interview and they put it in context of Facebook going down. But did it go down, or was it taken down from within? Or was it taken down from within, or from without, but from within, with knowledge from within? Because not only couldn't you log on to Facebook, for example, which is the biggest repository of information about people, and I would argue, in my professional opinion, the servers have a lot of damaging evidence from pedophilia to human trafficking and other things. So think about that, and does that make sense? Does it make sense that in the Internet of Things, quote, where people could not, at Facebook, could not, and Instagram, could not get in their offices? Why? Because everything's connected, right? Where's the override? Is there an override? Sure, there's always overrides. But they couldn't get in. What was happening during that blackout? Think about this. We are watching right now everything come together. Finally, it's being acknowledged now by Steve Bannon and others. Jack Posobiec is doing podcasts on this and tweeting about this. The spiritual battle. It's all a spiritual battle. Well, it's the framework for what we're seeing here in the physical, but it's being acknowledged. And even in the context of Facebook going down and big tech, the censorship. Let's play clip one, or I believe it's clip two, I'm sorry, from Steve Bannon from yesterday.
Joe, go back, because this is a deeper battle we're fighting, and this is where they're really going to try to break your will, and where they can't do it on the surface with the politics, because we've got that. Sweeping victory in 2022, the mass lining up, now we got to pull it off. Let's not get over our skis. We're not overconfident. We're not going to spike the football on the 50-yard line. We know we got work to do. But we know with Trump as our leader, we're going to win in 2024. We know he's going to win in 2022. I said, hey, he ought to be speaker for 100 days so we impeach Joe Biden and then move on, right? But the deeper issue is this issue of transhumanism and control at the technological level. And it's very, 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 very serious. I pride myself in not wasting my time. I pride myself in knowing the signal, not the noise. I pride myself in really focusing on what's important. And this is extremely important. It's one of the reasons I brought Joe Allen over. Go back to this Google executive. And this is the difference, just for nomenclature. It's one of the big things we do here. This is the difference between artificial intelligence and artificial general intelligence. When these Google executives were working on this, they believed they were seeing the birth of God, did they not, Joe Allen?
Yeah, the ex-Google employee that is under discussion, Mo Gawdot, actually said that the reality is, at Google, we are creating God. His interview with the Times of London was really revealing. The guy is talking about artificial general intelligence being able to outstrip human capacities. He sees this as inevitable. He's seeding the idea that this is inevitable. He also seeds the idea that artificial general intelligence, having surpassed human beings, could have ultimately destroyed us. Now, what a lot of people don't focus on is that he actually thinks that the creation of these systems, besides being inevitable, is a good thing so long as human beings teach them to be good too. He openly says that he sees artificial intelligence as a sort of a child in his care and a child in all of humanity's care. And to the extent that our data, as it's being strip mined from our lives, is good data, and we're saying good things, and we have only good intentions, then this artificial intelligence will grow up to be a benevolent god, and by 2049, it will be a billion times smarter than the smartest person, and will, in essence, control everything. Now, you talk about this idea of breaking the will, and you talk about this idea of demoralizing the population. I can't imagine anything more demoralizing than being ruled over by an all-encompassing, all-knowing computer god. But this is exactly the mythos that people at Google, such as Ray Kurzweil, and others at the World Economic Forum, such as Parag Khanna or Klaus Schwab, that's the idea that they are seeding, that their machines ultimately are more important than you are.
No, this is the great work in front of us, right? That will not happen, because then you're going to give up your humanity. This, at the end of the day, is a spiritual war, right? This is spiritual warfare at its highest and most important level. Now, we get into a lot of the mundane that you just have to do, but remember, that's about human agency. Divine providence, God works in the world, but he works through humans. He works through human agency, and that's what this is. This is this great fight.
All right. There was another segment, too, with Joe Allen and Jack Posobiec, but you get the idea, all right? I'll link the other clip. It would be worth your time to watch. It's 6 minutes plus. But in the interest of time here, I want to just expand on that and let you know that back in a couple of years ago, I sat in a green room at the Mansion Theater in Branson, Missouri, and spoke at length with Hugo de Garis. Hugo de Garis is one of the most intelligent men, I believe, on the planet, one of the most intelligent people on the planet. He's a retired researcher in the subfield of artificial intelligence, and he spoke at Branson, at one of the conferences at Branson. Hugo de Garis became known in the 1990s for his research on the use of genetic algorithms to evolve artificial neural networks using three-dimensional cellular stuff, okay? The reason I bring him up is because he believes what is happening now, and those people who attended or got the listened to and watched the conference in Branson and listened to him speak, talking about Artilex, and I've got pages upon pages upon pages of notes, believes that a major war before the end of this century, in fact, very soon, resulting in billions of deaths, is almost inevitable. Intelligent machines, or Artilex, which is a short version of the term artificial intellects, the Ardalecs will be far more intelligent than humans and will threaten to attain world domination. Okay, just put a period right there for a moment, because what are we working on, or what is, not we, but what are the Elon Musks of the world, what are they working on? Neurotransmitters, right? Artificial intelligence, am I correct? I think so. So, the push here is for the globalists to achieve small g godhood, because not everyone's going to be invited into this club. And the rest of us who are alive are going to be subjugated through the use of the same artificial intelligence framework. So you've got the small g gods, the overlords, subjugating the remaining population using artificial intelligence and using us as slaves. Now, that's a very, very, very simplified version of something much bigger that, you know, would take a couple of hours and Hugo de Garis to explain. But I think it's pretty clear. Well, what does Facebook have to do with that? Data mining, as you heard, destruction of evidence, because people are waking up now. People are starting to wake up and say, wait a minute. What's this clot shot all about again? Why are we being forced to take this clot shot in response to this pandemic? What's going on with this? And as people wake up, they become a threat, which is why Merrick Garland yesterday sent a memo to all of the FBI field offices saying meet with the local police and make an assessment on every parent that goes to and speaks at school boards, because it attacks critical race theory and attacks masks, mask mandates and such. This is our U.S. Attorney General, because people are waking up. And when people wake up, they present a threat to the globalist agenda. That's what's going on. But in the bigger realm of things, in the world international realm of things, that same process is taking place on a larger scale, of course. But they've got to kill the U.S. dollar as well. Why? Because they've got to usher in this digital currency. And in order to really sign on to the digital currency, you better have that jab juice that's going to make you part of the infrastructure that, if it doesn't kill you, will allow you to be subjugated. Now, maybe the first shot's not it. Maybe the second one's not it. But I guarantee you there will be a shot or shots or injections or whatever that will be that key. Or maybe it's binary or trinary or combination. That will, either, if it doesn't kill you, it will subjugate you to the bigger plans and bigger plots and bigger schemes. Because remember, Agenda 2030, you will own nothing and you will be happy. That's a conditioning process to tell you, look, we will own everything. You will be our servants, the people are left, because there is a massive depopulation agenda at play here. Bill Gates, of course, part of that. You know all of this. But go back, really, go back to 2013. I think I laid it out pretty well in the article. And again, I want to thank that YouTuber for reading the article. I think it has a lot more impact when it's read and stated that way. Some people don't like to read. Well, there it is. But this is happening today. You know, I was off by 8 years, 9 years. My apologies. But see, we must remember God with a big capital G is in control. Things happen on God's timeline, not ours. You know, man makes plans and God chuckles, right? I'm not disparaging, or I'm not trying to minimize God at all. I'm just saying that, you know, it's God's timing for all of this. It's not our timing. It's not it's not up to the globalists. It's not up to the people behind the globalists, the royal bloodlines and the inheritors of the earth. in their minds. It's not up to them. It's up to God. It's God's timetable, which is why I played that clip that Steve Bannon did yesterday. Folks, this is indeed a spiritual battle. And this is the battle for not just the heart and soul of America, not just the heart and soul of the West, but the heart, but the soul of every person on the planet. That's what this is all about, and that's how big this is. People say, well, how do you prepare for that? Well, you prepare by getting, by having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and by understanding who is in control by giving yourself over to Jesus and being saved. You know that, right? That's what we need to do. Our walk in faith must be firm. But it's also our duty to fight back as well, to resist this agenda, to call it out, to expose it, and to fight, not back down. Fight like our lives depend on it, and fight like, because they do, and fight like Christians, like we're called on to fight as Christians. This is serious. Again, please go back to 2013. The link to the article at Canada Free Press will be on, as well as the Hagman Report will be on in the show description page, the episode description page at HagmanReport.com. Please spread it around to your friends. And I want to thank my stepson, Josh, for talking to me this morning and saying, you know what, man, you were right on the money with this. I want to just give him a thanks. All right. Stan Dale from standale.com. Is he on? Okay. We're waiting for Stan to pop in, and when he does, we'll get to him. So this is what's happening. And I think when you look at, when you look at the things that are happening today, and Francis Collins, the NIH director, I sent out a Galileo alert on this as well, saying there's more to this story. He resigned from the NIH. Now, this is Fauci's boss. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, as it turns out, the level of collaboration between Francis Collins, Fauci, Peter Daszak, and the Communist Chinese Party is tremendous. I mean, there are like 6 or 7 points of interest written by Natalie Winters and Raheem Kashan at the National Pulse, saying, look at all of this, what Francis Collins has done. So the gain of function, the weaponization of this virus is being exposed, and the behind the paywall at the Epoch Times has this fantastic layout of the timeline. Going back to the early 2000s, the MERS days, and even before that, the interconnectivity between the globalist pandemic sponsors, the eugenicists, and what we're seeing today. So this has been in the planning stages for a long time. Just give me a heads up when he's in. Eric the Tech, by the way, did that make sense at all? Did I make sense or did I go off the rails there?
No, that's good.
All right. Because I want you to know how, you know, this, actually Josh had to remind me about this. And he said, hey, you know, I was doing some research about the, you know, digital currency and all this. And he said, my goodness, this popped up and I read this and I watched that video and now things are starting to make sense. He said, you were wrong about Syria. I said, no, wait, things are still going to happen. Remember the Bible verse, Damascus in a ruinous heap. Stan Dale talks about it, right? Damascus being a ruinous heap. I believe that the epicenter of World War III will be in Syria and Damascus. I do. And by way of Bible prophecy, it spells it out there. So, yes, Iran and Israel, big problems. China, Taiwan. And I see a lot of people making excuses for China, saying, well, you know, the ADIZ, the flight zone for Taiwan, extends over into the a couple of Chinese provinces. Okay, yeah, it does. But what's your point? Because the incursions, I think 77 incursions into Taiwanese airspace, 77 and counting, I think, you know, that doesn't, okay, that doesn't bode well for Taiwan. And one more time, what we're seeing there is this concentration or consolidation of power, because they cannot see the consolidation of power is necessary in order to implement this globalist system. You know, folks, you realize how close we are to this globalist system? Very, very, very close. And you know, the things, regardless, okay, things like the Facebook going down, going dark for hours yesterday. Yeah, you can explain that in a number of different ways. You could say hackers got into it. You tell me which hackers, you know, even the ones claiming responsibility. Oh, yeah, we did it. No, no, and no. In fact, Steve Bannon yesterday showed a map. I think it was from the Daily Mail, a map of the United States, and other communications, modes of communications that went down. What does that tell you? When does that happen? Right before a war, right? Right before something dramatic takes place. Now, I'm not saying a war is going to take place in the United States anytime soon, but there are little probes and prods and test runs. Can we agree on that? I think we can. And I don't want to over talk Stan. I want to give him as much time as possible. So. All right. So anyway, just so keep your eyes on this and keep your minds open and think bigger. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Think bigger. All right, Stan Dale from standale.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to standale.com and empshield.com. EMP Shield, I've got to say this. We're seeing things happen like these communication outages. Okay, I would classify what happened yesterday a communication outage in part, at least part of that. But what happens, in the event of an EMP or a solar, you know, storm? EMPshield.com/EMPshield.com. Use the code Hagman for $50 off. You need one of these for your car, your home, whatever power you've got, you need an EMP shield. I'm telling you right now, it'll bring you peace of mind. It'll keep your equipment from being fried during an EMP event, or whether it's man-made or space-made or natural occurrence. So you, when the grid does come back up, or when there is restoration of some power, at least you will have the equipment necessary to communicate. All right. He is there? All right. I don't want to take any time away from Stan. Stan Dale from standale.com. Stan, welcome.
Good evening, Doug and Eric. How you guys doing today?
Well, we're doing well. Doing well. Can barely talk, but it's all right, though. So,
what, are you talked out or were you shouting a lot?
No. I still have some issues with my jaw, and I've got to have surgery done on that. So, yeah, that's all right. No worries.
So the guy was bigger than you that hit your jaw, or what?
It's actually my wife. She clocked me. No, I'm kidding.
I know how that goes. All right.
Excuse me.
Oh, well, okay. Sorry about that, Holly. Yeah. Excuse me, she said.
Okay.
There are a number of things to talk about. We've been getting, you know, consistent emails about La Palma and the eruptions there. And several Christian prophecies have said that we're going to see a tsunami hit the east coast of the United States. So everybody's thinking, well, if the prophecies are correct and are from God, then it must be from the landslide that will occur over La Palma when the face of that old Cumbre de Vieja vent, you know, all those vents collapse into the sea and make this tsunami toward us. But that's not the only way In fact, one of the prophecies that I heard said that the tsunami would hit in the New England States area, up, you know, near Washington and those areas. And I thought, well, how else could we have a tsunami hit the Northeast United States coast and do damage? And then I remembered, in fact, you know, Eric, if you go to our show images page, people follow along, go to, let's say from slide 55, 56, 58, 59, all those five slides at the top, tell us how we can get a tsunami from a bomb, the Tsar Bomba, made by Russia and tested by Russia at the North Pole, just, you know, not far from the United States. Slide 60 shows the picture, you know, with snow on the base there at the Arctic, where they have actually got the room to store and to test this nuke. And if you go to that picture and click on it, it'll bring up not only a picture of the Tsar Bomba that they would use, the 2M39 torpedo, but where they would test it, where they've been storing it at the Arctic Pole. And if you scroll down that page, you can see the base without the snow and see how they've got icebreakers near there to come up from the sea up in there, get the bomb loaded on the top of the submarine and then drop back down underneath the ice cap so it can go along to the eastern coast of the United States and hit us with a tsunami. Now, clicking on slide 59 on the picture part gives you an illustration of how this thing will work. And I say will because they're threatening to hit us on a number of issues, you know, eventually here on our eastern states. And China will take care of our western coast, but Russia's going to hit us on the east. Now, in this picture, the Poseidon 2M39 torpedo, if you click on that, you'll see that it produces not only a tsunami when it launches from the submarine, it produces radioactive water waves. So even when the tsunami is finished, what it's done is it's left radioactivity all over the areas that it's flooded from this nuclear detonation. Am I able to share my screen there?
Yes, sir.
Let me try. All right. There we go. Now that's what I'm talking about. The yellow arrow, of course, shows where it's going to go and then detonate and then produce the tidal wave, on the United States. I'm telling you, this might be the way to fulfill the prophecies in the attack on the United States by flooding our key areas in the New England states and making them radioactive. So nobody wants to live there again. It's just so radioactive for generations that it'll be dead zone. It's almost biblical. Yeah. Okay. And let us get back over here to the show images.
We're having some issues here with the sharing option here, I think. Are we okay?
Were you able to see that share I put up?
Yeah. We did see that, but wait a second. It's working, but not with our software. So it's not really working. So okay, you tell us what to put up and we'll put it up.
So Eric, you can click on the slides and we can see them at your side.
Yes.
Okay. Well, click on the picture in slide 58.
Slide 58. Folks, if you're following or if you're watching this at home, go to standale.com, click on the show images, and then click on the applicable slide. Slide 58, you said. There it is.
There it is. Now, if you click on the slide and look at it, it's got three pictures and it's showing the height of a tsunami wave coming at the New England coast from a bomb like this, from a submarine like that below. These are all from the article that goes underneath that. If you click on the text, it takes you to the full article. Oh. But this is a serious thing to look at. Slide 55. If you click on that picture, it'll take you to the article, Eric. It says Russia is testing a nuclear torpedo in the Arctic that has the power to trigger radioactive tsunamis, plural, off the U.S. coast. Now, there have been some arguments saying that he won't use this because that kind of a missile is slow and easy to track, and that we might be able to hit it with an interceptor, you know, torpedo of our own. I don't know the pros and cons, but for him to have this device and be testing it up in the Arctic makes me uneasy. It's just like you were saying when you came into the show here this evening, Doug, the energy, you know, the hitting the energy supplies and the internet and things like that are precursors, potentially, to an invasion. And they're testing the waters, well, so to speak, with the electronics and electricity supply. They're going to hit places like our gas pipelines, our nuclear reactors. All these things are going to be tested. And it's going to be very important, as you said, for not only the individuals and small business to have EMP shields to protect from, you know, an airburst that's produces EMP, but also from, you know, hackers and things like that. They hit our network. If they hit these little remote stations that hook up to gas and electric distribution points and balanced loads, it could cause incredible fast buildup of pressure in the natural gas lines to homes and cause them to explode. It can cause fires out in the paddocks and out in the, you know, the wheat fields and stuff, or wheat fields, whatever's left with the drought, from this EMP energy buildup. This, you know, I everyone that reads the, like the War Times and things like that, the Military Times magazine and things, knows that we've been expecting things from Russia like this. And this Tsar Bomba thing, or this, you know, the one I forget its actual number, but it is a real threat. And it'll be a hard one to stop if they get close enough to us off, you know, off international waters. We'll know that they're there, but I don't know that we'll be able to communicate with our submarines and stuff efficiently if they block our radio transmission somehow with, you know, electromagnetic noise. Anyway, just these five articles, you know, are necessary to see one of the things that it's a real clear and present danger to the United States. And to those, of course, living on the New England coast.
What if they took out the GPS capabilities of the United States? I mean, can you imagine?
Would be pretty bad. Pretty bad.
We have GPS satellites, right? So
yeah, and we have the military constellation of GPS as well.
Right.
Of satellites.
Right.
And to compromise them, all you'd have to really do is either put a cloud of sand up in the path of these satellites that are over the United States, or, you know, it traveling in a contrary direction, so it would just blow up all of our satellites, or blanket them with some sort of an electromagnetic pulse in orbit. In orbit, it's harder to protect against EMP pulses because you got to have a ground source, and when you're in space, the only ground source that you might have is space itself. And that requires bigger tethers and things like that and trailing things, you know, behind the satellite, which would affect its performance. So, yeah, they could hit our GPS satellites, the military has up there. And not only would our submarines be in trouble, our aircraft would be in trouble, our ground troops would be in trouble, our communications would be in trouble all over the planet. I mean, we're very vulnerable up there. They don't make a big deal of it to the public, but we are. And, you know, the enemy watches our newspapers and reports as well. And, of course, they're probably chuckling over there because they know they've got us cornered at the moment. And we're just not telling people because we want people to behave themselves in our country, not panic.
And you know, of course, I have to mention this. All of this, the vulnerabilities, it kind of substantiates the 2019 election, where, oh yeah, you know, we want to minimize the points of contact with the internet from these machines. But, you know, isn't it interesting that the vulnerabilities by way of Facebook yesterday and Instagram and others were shown, and some communications, were shown that, you know what? I mean, how hard would it be then? How difficult would it be to influence or to change the results of an election? In order to expedite this globalist agenda, you know, conspiracy theories? No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, we're seeing this happen in real time. Go ahead, sir.
No, you're right. I mean, it's common sense in war to cut your supply lines to your enemy's army, and B, to make it so he can't communicate with your commanders in the field, like your leader, the president, or the military generals. And today, with our dependence on electronics made in China mostly, you know, the chips, we're terribly exposed to problems. Just common sense tells you that. And so that's why we tell people, you know, get your EMP shields, if you can get alternative energy stored on your property, and preferably something that's renewing, like solar, and you know, hope for the best to reconstruct your neighborhood should you survive the ground attacks. We're in trouble, and you need to prepare to be isolated. Your house is going to become your castle, and you know where you you make your last stand, possibly. So you got to stock it up, get communication, so that you can hopefully communicate with other people. And yeah, I've got my castle here behind me. That's Deo Castle on the French border to Switzerland. And
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. My basement's big there. If you'll notice, it goes down a ways.
modest quarters there, but yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, when Holly mows the lawn, it's a real challenge.
you probably make her use a rider, especially on those hills, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm working on a via drive craft to kind of let her hover on some of those peaks, you know, just to help her along a bit.
Very kind of you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's the least I can do. Very least. Oh Lord.
But no, I do like your castle. All right.
All right. Wow. Now, other things, you know, these are man-made things, war things we're talking about, but the weather is not behaving either. And, you know, you may be in a part of the world, particularly the United States, where maybe it hasn't affected you, but for the most of us that grow crops and flowers and things, we've noticed over the last 2, maybe 3 years, an increasing chaos in the temperatures and the water, you know, rain and stuff like that over certain areas that were, you know, traditionally very good for growing. And one of the things that's causing this is a shift in the jet stream, the high-altitude jet stream that we have around the North Pole, and we have one at the South Pole as well. Now, this, in slide 52, if you click on the text of that, Harry, that will bring up the article from Science Alert. Scary weather will be inevitable if the jet stream keeps moving like it is now. The polar jet stream circles the northern hemisphere, swirling up to 9 miles above our heads like a curvy ethereal crown on the planet. This band of strong wind separates cold air from the Arctic from warmer air to the south, and it's responsible for transporting weather from west to east across the United States, over the Atlantic, and into Europe. It controls how wet and warm these regions are. But according to this study, the jet stream is shifting north as global temperatures rise. This is all part of this global warming, which isn't all our fault, humanity's fault. It's a lot to do with the sun, which we'll get to later. As every week I talk about, the sun is unstable, and it's going to have a solar maximum a year ahead of time in this particular cycle, at least a year ahead of time. The delicate balance of warm and cold air that keeps the stream in place is getting disturbed. Now, it says here, greenhouse gas emissions continue unabated. The study found the jet stream will break out of its normal range by 2060. You know, consider the source of it. They're trying to make it so that, you know, we've got to get rid of our cars and go to commuter trains and things like that in concentrated cities where the globalists can control us. But anyway, this is telling you, for whatever reason they say, this is telling you that we're having crazy weather. It's affecting crops. It's, you know, it's causing migrations of large numbers of people just to get food to survive. And the jet stream is sometimes due to perturbations by, you know, electric charge in the atmosphere, even that jet stream will dip down across the United States and Canada, of course, and produce mighty winds, sometimes, you know, like almost vertical winds coming down and cutting into forests and things and chopping the trees off, you know, at the ground level. You know, these microbursts are terrible. Anyway, this article is saying, okay, well, expect, you know, bad weather. Well, I've been telling you that for a long time, and so have a lot of other of the watchmen who've been watching the news and you know, where things are going. Thing is, again, stay prepared as best you can. If you've got weather problems around you normally, like if you're going to have flooding, be sure you know how to handle the flooding. You can get to high ground or block basement windows or doors and stuff with sandbags if you need to. You know, where we are, we're sitting on a hill, so we only get a little bit of runoff from our neighbor's property, and it goes off into the street. but we still put protection into our window wells to keep them from flooding. So time to think about preparing your castle, guys. I repeat that again.
Self-reliance seems to be the phrase of the day. You need to be self-reliant.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I couldn't agree more. There is a test coming in November, slide 57. NASA's Armageddon-style asteroid deflection mission takes off in November. The DART mission, D-A-R-T, managed by the Planetary Defense Coordination Office, involves sending a pair of satellites out to a relatively nearby pair of asteroids known as the Didymos Binary. It's one largish asteroid, approximately 780 meters across, and that's Didymos proper, and a 160-meter moonlet in its orbit. And what they want to do is they want to use a high-impact satellite, an asteroid mover. It won't be a killer. And they're going to film this. I think they have a secondary satellite going with the DART mission, and it will watch the vapor trail that forms when they hit this asteroid to try to deflect its course a tiny bit. And understand the mass of a satellite like that is so small compared to this thing that's 700, well, let's see, what would that be meter? That'd probably be nearly 900 yards in diameter. You know, a little satellite like that is so small that its mass impact, even when it's traveling, you know, at 60,000 miles an hour when it hits it, that impact is, like a gnat's wings on this thing. So they have to do this way far out in the asteroid's orbit, not when it's just about to hit the Earth, but like months and years ahead of time, to cause its orbit to shift ever so slightly, which over the year or two or three starts to move it so that it misses the Earth's gravitational field and doesn't get pulled in to hit us. But these are real attempts to try to figure out ways to protect us, because it's getting busy out there. And we can't see, as I've said many times, we can't see visually all of the asteroids, you know, the meteors that are out there that could hit us because of non-reflectivity. You know, they're dark, or the sunlight doesn't get them where we could see them. So this is another very important issue that's linked to the sun, just like the weather changes. These are things that we have to depend on, you know, NASA and people like that to try to defend us against. Oh, yeah. And by the way, in slide 53, we're going to have some help out there in that respect. In the Captain Kirk, Bill Shatner, is going to go up into a suborbital launch with Origin Blue, Blue Origin, and be in space at 90 years old. He's going to be a rocket man for real. I think that's just so cool. That man amazes me. He's healthy looking there at 90 years old. What does he do to keep in shape like that? It must be good tequila or something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah.
Going where no 90-year-old ever has gone before, right?
Definitely true. I don't know what their toilet situation is on Blue Origin, but on SpaceX, they had trouble with their toilet with the civilians, which they're now making changes to. But, things that you get used to here, and especially if you're an elderly person, you know, the toilet is pretty important to your daily function. And so I hope they have corrected the problem that SpaceX had on the Blue Origin launch so that he's not uncomfortable. But, I know.
And
they're leaving. Sorry, go on.
I know. I was just going to say, I like them in Boston Legal.
With the cigar and the glass at the end of the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And when he was approached by a mugger, that scene, that iconic scene where Shatner says, you know, it's not going to work for me, and pulls out his gun and shoots the mugger once in one knee, once in the other knee, and it's funny.
Just calm, yeah. So. Yeah, he had James Spader, I think, played opposite him in that.
It's, you know, sadly, though, you know, it's some of these Hollywood people, but anyway, very interesting though, nonetheless. Go ahead, sir.
Now Christmas coming up, holidays coming up, you know, Halloween and Thanksgiving. And, you know, if you're conservative, you can have, Halloween dinners and parties and things. And you can have, you know, Thanksgiving. You've got food and things. But the shortage of protein is increasing. Now, this is indirectly connected to the shortage of products of all kind getting into the country. With over 40 ships on the West Coast even standing offshore waiting for, they're going to be waiting for months to land and unload their cargo, you know, containers from China and from, you know, Taiwan and things like this. So toys and other things that that we expect to be there toward the end of the year, you know, and birthday presents and things that come from overseas, like phones, you know, iPhones and stuff like that. These are going to be in short supply and high demand. And they're saying that it's probably more of the truckers being not driving that's causing these containers not to be unloaded and distributed across the country, you know, to the Walmarts and other superstores, box stores. You know, you can only have so many of these containers unloaded per day, even if you're running it at maximum. You know, with dock workers, they don't have all the dock workers they want and not all the truck drivers they want, because this administration, shall we call it, in the White House is paying people so much that they don't need to work. They just stay home and watch TV or the hoodie or whatever. In California, I think they are training 16-year-old kids that want to be truckers in driving the trucks. I mean, these guys they're young and they're inexperienced in a lot of things, but they're training them to drive the trucks because they're not union members and they will do it for the money, you know, because they're not getting paid at the moment. And they're not part of the people that are being paid to stay home. This is desperation, and it's going to get worse. This is going to cause a domino effect throughout our industries here. You know, shortage of supply is going to cause companies to actually, smaller ones, to go bankrupt because they depend on their month-to-month sales. And if they're not getting product in, you know, there's just so many weeks that people will wait on product before they cancel orders. I wonder really how Amazon is even going to get their stuff out unless they use some of these drones for the smaller packages. This is another real clear and present danger, you know, to our economy, to the order of our civilization here in the United States. We're so fragile, you know, in our dependence on electronics and things, you know, being the way they are, the post hoc ergo prompt hoc, that the things have been this way, they will always be this way. And all of a sudden we're getting hit in the face with these challenges that are mighty. And they're chaotic, and they're going to produce terrible problems in this country.
You know, sadly, we don't produce much anymore in this country. If we did, you know, perhaps things would be a little bit better. But no, we outsource to China. We outsource to Taiwan and other countries. That's part of the problem as well, I believe, anyway. But I think this is not a bug, so to speak. It's a feature. I believe this is all being planned. This is working according to the plan. You know, to create shortages. The first hour, I was talking about killing the U.S. dollar. And back in 2013, I wrote an article, March 31st, 2013. Intelligence Insider, Obama administration agenda to kill the U.S. dollar. Well, that's more true today than ever before to you know, create a global currency and such. And I think everything you're talking about right now, I think is leading to that global governance, that consolidation of power, as opposed to the sovereignty of individual nations. And that, of course, is necessary for the end game by the globalists.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes us, you know, as nations, really dependent on the New World Order. When they finally take over, there's going to be, you know, people in third world countries that do manufacturing or grow crops and whatever, and they will have to bow to the order of the New World Order about how much they can consume themselves of their product, how much they have to export. And, of course, now the United States, as you say, is not making a lot, but there are some products that we export. You know, Mexico, India, these countries that we trade with, they're all going to be under the thumb of the New World Order in the name of spreading the wealth across the planet. And let's face it, America has been an empire, you know, for probably since World War II. It has stretched out across the planet and has embassies and ambassadors and, you know, military postings all over the planet. We're like the modern Babylon that just reached everywhere. And just like the ancient Babylon, we have got many languages in our own country. So many, I mean, there's 180 or some odd languages, I forget how many they say are spoken here now by migrants, you know, whether legal or not. And it causes confusion because people can't understand each other. I mean, Alexander the Great faced this problem when he formed his armies after he took over other countries in warfare. He would immediately start taking soldiers, making soldiers out of the countries that he'd conquered, and he would teach them Koine Greek, a language which he formed from the old Greek, so that it was clear, precise meanings in the words, and he taught his soldiers, the foreign ones that he made and everything else, this language, so that he could give clear instructions to his armies and they'd understand and they could communicate. Communicate being an operative word. As I was saying earlier, if our communications go down, we're in deep trouble. You know, we're balanced on a knife edge. You're so dependent on technology and the way things are that when the little building blocks that hold us up are knocked out one by one in these great chess moves, we're going to collapse in a heap. And we are going down. And whether it's fast or slow is about the only thing that we can mitigate at the moment. Boy.
Happy thoughts. Yeah.
Well, real thought. Look, I
no, that's reality. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had to go in for a check with my pain doctor, and I was talking to his receptionist yesterday. And I talk to her every 3 months when I go in. And she's, you know, middle-aged, a fairly intelligent lady. But I talked to her. I said, what do you think about all these cargo ships, you know, that some 40-some-odd sitting off the coast, they can't get in, and, you know, products can't get to us in time for Christmas? And she said, oh, really? I didn't realize that. And I thought, this is a simple thing. And you go to the store and you see prices increasing and you don't ask why. You don't read the news. And I'm afraid for this country. If there are a lot of people like that, they're just saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, the government's, they'll sort this out. It ain't going to happen. You know, they're blinded to what's happening. I'm so sorry for them.
Yeah. I agree. And I think, people really need to see the enormity of what is happening today. People aren't getting the scale upon which we are, as you say, on the knife's edge. And I think that we were brought to this point. And this is, I mean, God's time, God's in control. And this is God's timeline. But, you know, we still have to do our part. We still have to fight. We still have to stand in the gap and such, but nonetheless, I'm blown away too by the lack of awareness by people who should know. I mean, my goodness, don't we get what 90-some% of our antibiotics from China?
Yes.
Okay.
And how about all of our other medicines, you know, like pain meds that a lot of people use?
Yeah.
Even if you get it, can you trust it, or is it going to be, you know, polluted or corroded or whatever?
Yeah. So the enormity of the problem is, the enormity of the agenda is what I really believe people really need to start paying attention, and the spiritual nature of what's taking place. So go ahead,
sir. That knife edge analogy I used there applies to also the division of the United States. You know, almost basically into the producing parts of the country, the flyover parts, as they call it, and the concentrated cities on the east and west coast. These differences are going to add to the growing civil disorder, or, you know, civil war that's going to happen. And when that finally materializes, we're done. We've defeated ourselves by being a house divided. Props, the money, all this stuff, you know, just it is going to explode and then collapse. I mean, our share market, I looked at them today, Fox Nation opening up the opening bell for the share market early this morning. You know, the lack of understanding, at least public in the news, things are all going cheer, cheer. We've been 25 years, this is doing exchange and it's a happy time and shares are going to go up. And they can't see it coming. Or if they do, they're not allowed to say it to the people because they want everybody to stay calm and not, you know, running around like hens in the yard where the fox is. Anyway, on that note here, we live in Colorado, right? And one of our counties just across a short part of the Rockies that's kind of to our west where we live, there's a county called Sawatch. And it's, mainly a valley and desert and some trees up in the mountains there, but then some lowlands. And Jim Shepherd's company that we started out with doing his website and everything for Berkey Water is located there. And they've just passed a resolution to what the Sawatch County is going to do in a case of an emergency countywide. Now, this in slide 46, Eric, that's where that is. This allows entry into households and prevents the sale of guns and ammo. And in the white text underneath there, I'm just going to read you parts of this resolution they've now passed. And you can, there's a link down at the bottom where you can download the PDF of this resolution and see that we're not kidding you. This is real. Although not stated in the article about this resolution, the county is given unheard of rights in case of emergency that they declare. Allows county to prevent the sale of anything. Allows for closing of non-essential businesses. Prevents the sale of alcohol, firearms, allows county to accept gifts from nonprofits and private organizations, suspends the use of water resources, and has the ability to enter any property at will without a warrant. Now, that's spooky. It's only one county here, but, you know, Colorado is a lefty state now with all the Californians that have moved in.
Anyway. According to the information I had, this is going to be the template, and you can see this on your screen, folks, okay? This resolution, what it does, this will be a template for other counties. And there's a push, just like there was a push for the prosecutors to be left of center, far left of center, through Soros and his foundation and others like Soros, so too will this be employed in areas like this county, where possible. So we have to watch this. And I'm telling you, this is all part of the larger plan because you know what? They don't want you fighting back against the surveillance state as we wake up, men and people are waking up. And that's why, you know what? Stan, that's why the FBI, Merrick Garland yesterday issued that letter to all of the FBI offices saying, we want you to meet with the police departments to make sure that the school boards the parents aren't getting out of control at the school boards because moms, dads are waking up to both the mask issue, but more importantly, the subject matter, including critical race theory being taught. So that's part of it. That's part of it. And there it is right there. Citing an increase in harassment, intimidation. Because, you know, one mom said, hey, follow the money about the mask mandates. Or another mom says, went to the school board and said, you know what? I don't like what you're teaching, this pornography. This is all connected, I believe, in my view.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it is. Now, I glossed over La Palma earlier when I was talking about volcanoes. Mm-hmm. Now slide 47, 48, 43, and 44, all of those four slides deal with aspects of La Palma at present. Now slide 47 says that Spain's prime minister says La Palma will be rebuilt as lava flow continues. The activity coming from the Cumbre Vieja volcano does not show signs of slowing down anytime soon. The Canary Islands Volcanology Institute has been monitoring the eruptions and noted on Twitter on Sunday morning that explosive activity was intensifying and by afternoon effusive activity had increased after they reported it. And slide 48 to the right of that shows a third fissure opening up, allowing more lava to flow toward the sea. And it's been attended by, you know, 8 new significant earthquakes. Now, you read that and you think, oh, holy cow, things are ramping up. You know, this is just one volcano out of an entire planet full of volcanoes that are active. And slide 43, you can click on the map, seeing the currently erupting volcanoes as well, because La Palma is not the only thing, you know, or Cumbre de Vieja is not the only thing active in the volcano world. But if you click on that picture, you see all these places and you think, holy cow, are volcanoes increasing? And the fact of the matter is, the science of it is, no, they're kind of on the average of what they've been for, you know, a long time. You know, the orange things in that graph are minor activity, and those red ones are in, active, very active. I just put that up on your screen for you. And even, get this, down in Africa, on the southeastern side, you can see that there's two volcanoes, one red and one orange. Now, the one that's orange is Oldoinyo Lingai, which is on the north side of the Garden of Eden. And that has been erupting constantly for thousands of years. It's not as powerful as, you know, the normal magma, you know, that comes out of the bigger volcanoes, but it is now active and, with minor activity. So it's not just, you know, La Palma, and it's not an excessive amount of things either. So just want to make that clear. Okay. Now, the slide 44 has an interesting graph there, or image formed from not only real satellite imagery, but also from thermal imaging over La Palma. Now, if you click on the, let's see here, the picture, it's a big picture if you blow it up, but before you enlarge it, you look at this. On the right side of that red trail is where Cumbre de Vieja is, and where the vents are, the 8 or 9 vents, that are, you know, pushing the lava down towards the sea on the left side of the picture, which is the Atlantic Ocean. If you click on it, and enlarge it, you'll see this goes down to, you know, a street level almost there in La Palma, showing these hot spots all over the place, those red squares, you know, with a white surround on them. There's one area there in the middle of that red stuff, underneath the word Canarias, that is an island. That area of housing there has become an island, and it's kind of like saved these houses and little farms that were there, you know, simply by altitude, which is kind of neat, but you know, once the lava is finished, they've got to get out of there and be able to go back to roads and stuff and join the rest of the country. Strange stuff.
Wow. Okay. You know, I'm going to go back if I can to what you just said earlier. Did you happen to see, it was in the New York Post a couple of days ago. Archaeologist claims Mount Sinai found in, where was that? I'm going to pull up the article right now.
Saudi Arabia?
I believe, I thought of you, and I believe it was. Let's see. Northwestern Saudi Arabia, a mountain range in northwestern Saudi Arabia, which kind of fits with what you were saying.
About what?
That area, the Garden of Eden and such, but Mount Sinai, and I know the times are different, but the experts say or believe that they found one of the holiest sites in the Bible miles from where it was previously assumed to have existed, and they're putting it in northwestern Saudi Arabia. So that was
I was going to talk about that. We can look at that now. Slide 45.
I didn't mean to bump your agenda there. So sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Let's look at it. Let me just make a change here. Now, in slide 45, if you click on the image, it'll blow up and it'll show you what that article was talking about.
Yeah, you know, I missed that. I'm sorry about that, Stan. I missed that on your page. I apologize.
That's all right. That's cool. We'll discuss it. It doesn't matter what order we discuss these things in. Now, what you're looking at in that picture, in the background, I've got another image I'll talk about in a minute behind me there. But if you click on the photo in that slide 45. That will give you what they were using for that article. Now, they say instead of Jabal al-Laws in Saudi Arabia, which you can see just above the little green rectangle in the thing, if you can get that up, guys.
It's
switch
up.
From there. You go. See the little green rectangle with the five in it down there. Underneath that is the wording Jabal Makla, which means Mount Makla. And that is where they say that the Mount Sinai really was. And instead of Jabal al-Laws just above that, because Jabal al-Laws still has red dirt and things like that, but in the biblical account of Moses talking to God there on the mount, Mount Sinai, his God's presence was so mighty that it was burning and causing fire, you know, charring the top of the mountain for days. And if you look at Jabal Makla, that is what it looks like. It's burned. It's not like eruptive lava. It's been scorched. And so I think he's probably right. And it still works for all the other sites that have been found right at the base of this mountain versus Jabal al-Laws. In between them, you can see a number of the things that show that, you know, where Moses had the Israelites camp at the base of the mountain. That's another whole argument or discussion. But I agree with this. I believe that that is probably the more proper location of Mount Sinai than the one just above it. Now, in this guy's argument, he says that if you look on that same picture up along the Gulf of Aqaba, that long blue line there, Eric, it says Nuweiba, and that's on the west side of the Gulf of Aqaba. That's where he says that Israel crossed on a land bridge going over into Saudi Arabia. But, you know, the biblical account just does not support that viewpoint because of the number of places that Israel had to stop at early in the peace, you know, when they just left Egypt. This was technically Egypt at that time on the west coast there in the Sinai Peninsula. But if you go back to my slide 45, and see where it says C stands idea of the path of the Exodus here. Click on the word here there, and you're going to see what I've got up behind me, but in greater detail. And if you trace the timing, how many days, you know, et cetera, that the Israelites under Moses were taking after they crossed the Reed Sea. It wasn't the Red Sea. It was the Reed Sea. And, I put it all together. I've studied this for years in the Hebrew. And the little red line I've got there, if you can possibly click on that, Eric, on that word here at the bottom of that slide in the text.
It's up, Stan. It's okay. Showing right now.
All right.
Yep.
Now look at that. It's gone. Doesn't stay long, does it?
No, it's still up. I don't know what you're seeing, but it's still up.
Well, I start seeing me. It's blinking back and forth between me. But anyway, as long as it's working.
It's up right now.
Okay. That red line starts over in northern Egypt, and gosh, it's hard to talk with my head in the way here. Anyway, that red line it goes across a shallower part of the Gulf of Suez, and it fits the biblical description of where they camped the first night and, you know, how a tornado type thing, a cyclone, formed over the water there and blew the water away over the night so that it was dry ground for Israel to escape Egypt across the Reed Sea. Now, for them to cross over in the Gulf of Aqaba, as this guy was saying, to get to Saudi Arabia would have been very, very difficult because there's no land bridge there. There's just a deep crack in the earth, part of the Great East African Rift going up to form the Jordan Valley. So that crossing area there was just totally impractical for the biblical account. And I was able to find, and my team that were helping me, we were able to find the saltwater ponds, you know, of the Ras Seder on the eastern side of the Gulf of Suez. All these things I'm talking about are on this picture. If it were there, I just don't know why it doesn't show, but is it showing the map there?
Yes, it's showing. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know why it doesn't show on mine, but anyway.
Go ahead, Eric. Are you sharing your screen? Because if you are, if you turn the sharing feature off, I think it'll pop in the what we're seeing here?
No, I'm not sharing, but okay. I guess I could. You want me to do that?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
That's all right. Well, you'll see that the red line, I track that, as I said, by the biblical account, how many days and how many miles a day the camels and people could travel to get to the next, station of the route of the Exodus. And I was able to trace them on the Suez side of the mountain range there in the Sinai Peninsula, as you can see by that red line. And then they turned inland, and I've tracked every bit of that inland behind what people think is Mount Sinai, but behind that tip of the Sinai Peninsula, where they could have gone with their herds and had, access to water and clear pathways for all the animals and the people. And at the end, up at the top of the Gulf of Aqaba, I found two routes they could have taken to get to Jethro's camp, where Moses' father-in-law was and where his herds were. And there, they would have crossed over land, dry land, rather than trying to cross over several hundred feet deep, water. We arrive at the same place and we choose the same mountain, but this guy says there was some evidence of the 12 palms, water station that Moses found on the other side, on the Saudi side, but really there was a lot of it over on the western part of the Sinai Peninsula where my red path line goes. A whole interesting discussion, that one, because, it adds, fact to the Exodus. Now, this guy says that at the word Aqaba, in the Gulf of Aqaba, you'll see a thing that says Nuweiba, and that was the peninsula. He said that they came off of that and crossed over to Saudi Arabia. But it's just, they say that in the water there, they've dived and they've found encrusted formations that look like, chariots, like Egyptian chariots that are encrusted with, junk from the sea. Now, we can't find any of those, or we haven't found any of those over where I said they crossed up near the Suez Canal. But, the wheels and the chariots could have been here from shipwrecks even, or fallen off ships that trade from, the Red Sea up the Gulf of Aqaba into, Eilat. So they could well have found those things there, but I don't know that that's the same chariot wheels and chariots that belonged to Egypt when they were just swamped by the water coming back in, after after God stopped the holding back of the water so that Israel could cross at the Suez. It's a very interesting study, and people that do Bible studies and can use their Hebrew, and Chaldean lexicons, it is really worth the time to track the Exodus and the timing of where they were. And, for instance, I talked about this probably two or three episodes ago about the fact that the Exodus had to occur where I said it did, because there were these bitter saltwater ponds just not long after they'd been out of Egypt out across the Suez there. And people were grumbling that they didn't have any fresh water and their animals were going to die. They were going to die. And I found the place now that it's to this day, it's still a salt manufacturing place, a town that brings water and, it evaporates and they get salt from it. But at the time Moses was there wasn't a business as such, but these saltwater ponds, he said to two of his young men, he said, look, go get some wood, like I'm telling you, some logs, and throw them far out into these ponds in the air so they come down and splash, and it will turn it into fresh water. Well, I used military maps, 1 to 100,000, up into the mountains to the east of there, and I found that there was a wadi that comes right down to the saltwater ponds underneath them, and that because of the over, spray from the winds, horrific winds in the Gulf of Suez at times, and they blew the salt water over the top of the fresh water coming to the surface from this wadi. And it was done so well, so easily, that the top was salt water, but the bottom was fresh water from the wadi. And when they threw the logs in, it caused an inversion, the salt water was heavier, and it fell down underneath the fresh water, popped it up to the surface, and there was fresh water. this occurred at a certain time early in the Exodus and not in the length of time it would have taken to go the route that, that these guys say over to the Gulf of Aqaba before they crossed. Anyway, that's, I'm beating a dead horse there, but anyway.
That's very interesting. Wow. And so what we're seeing is contemporaneous, in my view anyway, contemporaneous finds that verify the scripture account, or account in scripture in the Bible about events at the, you know, at that time. So very good.
While we're on that, let's look at another discovery in slide 42 underneath that. They say Noah's Ark is found, ? And it's a video. Whether you click the picture or the text, well, the text takes you to describing it. In fact, click on the text. That's an interesting point. Now, I've known about this particular formation that they're saying they've just now discovered for probably 25 years. And I knew one of the people that financed the expedition to Ron Wyatt, et cetera, to go over there and explore this particular formation. Now, I'm not saying that this isn't the Ark of Noah, you know, that's been covered by, you know, mud and things for years. But I am saying, if you look at that slide 42 at the bottom, see this example. Okay, click on that, and you're going to see pictures of other formations like this in Montana. And in geology, that boat-shaped formation occurs in where you have warping or bending of the strata forming mountain ranges. And they're called geosynclines. Now, some of them are raised, like the one in the bottom of that picture. I hope. Yeah, well, you're in the green. Yeah. And then some of them are like in the green, what that we saw over in Turkey. So the question is, are we looking at what they've found as, Noah's Ark or a geosyncline? And that's, you know, I look at this, at the formations around it, and it looks like it's geology that's formed that structure there. And there have been reports, sightings since, you know, World War I flying over the mountains there in Turkey that showed, one pilot actually tried to photograph it from the air in one of those biplane type things, showing the wooden part of an ark sticking out of an ice formation. Now, I tend to think that the real ark, you know, the wooden part of it is still on the slopes, but not at this particular place here. And that we will, one of these days, be allowed to see in the mountains, not Mount Ararat, but in the mountain range of Ararat, we will be able to find it and look inside and see the wooden timbers that are preserved now then, because there have just been too many pieces that have been handed down over the generations there in Turkey, especially to the priests and monks who live on the slopes there, saying that these came from the ark, you know, in our times. They've been able to salvage them. Just want to put my two cents in, because we've been looking at that for years and studying that along with the Exodus. You know, I support trying to prove everything the Bible says, and I believe the ark is up there, probably broken in half, but it is up there, and one day hopefully we'll be able to see it. State of the sun, slide 40. Sorry, you had a question?
No, now it's happy time. State of the sun. Go ahead.
Well, slide 41 in the text, if you click on the text, it will take you to the article, which I got that picture from. And it's showing that, the graph showing where we should have the maximum activity from the sun, sunspots, for this cycle around 2025 going into 2026. But in the article, it says here, the sun has a mind of its own, though higher than expected sunspot counts. Okay, I've been telling you this, suggests a stronger cycle with a peak occurring in late 2024 instead of mid-2025. They say it's good news for aurora watchers. It'd be good displays in the north and in the nighttime sky, but maybe not so good for the internet, because we will have interruptions of transmissions of radio waves and things like that, and CMEs and magnetic storms because of this exceptionally active sunspot cycle. So that's just underscoring what I've been telling you. Watch the sun. It's misbehaving, and it's going to continue to misbehave and probably get even worse. inside 40, the picture there just shows you the approaching sunspot, magnetic sunspot hole that's formed in the surface of the sun that we can see. It's heading our way. And in slide 37, the normal heliograph that we show, that green thing, if you click on that, you'll see there's an active region there at about 30 degrees latitude heading to the right of the screen, to the middle toward us, and should be here around 9th or 10th of October with an active region facing us. Those white things are active regions.
Wow. We've got about 5 minutes, Stan.
Oh, so do we? Oh, yeah. I was thinking we were, yeah, no, okay.
Okay, we're okay. About four now, but we're okay.
Okay. Now, slide 49 and 50 and 51, these three slides all talk about the same situation. There was a report called the Pandora Papers. Okay. You've talked about it, have you?
Well, briefly, but yes, let's do talk about this. Go ahead.
All right. Well, in slide 50, you can see the article deals with the fact that all these rich leaders of various countries, you know, like Putin and, the leadership king of Jordan, Abdullah II, he's talking about all these people, all these guys that have got huge amounts of money, like hundreds of millions, that are hidden in various other countries. And, you know, the article goes on to list a few of them here. But if the people of these countries see this and see how their leadership is just getting fat, I mean, with the money that they're socking away in other countries, it's like the president of Afghanistan that took his hundreds of millions of U.S. dollars and fled the country, you know, he's okay. And so all the people of these countries that are saying in this report that their leadership has been soaking up the money personally, you know, buying homes in the U.K. and the United States, you know, like $100 million homes and stuff like that, the people are then going to get really dissatisfied with their governments that have done this. And I've been predicting this. It's going to fit the pattern for allowing the people to support a new world order that will overthrow all these rich dudes that are part of the Illuminati. And, you know, there's the Illuminati, and then there's the real fallen ones, you know, the Great Deception, which is the real Illuminati coming, you know, from the skies with Satan. Anyhow, this is just another thing that underscores the progress of the plan to have a global world order supported by the people of the world, not so much the leadership, but the people. And these reports and videos here in these three slides will tell you that. So,
you know, Stan, I just had one question about that. Why now? Why was the dump now? 11, almost 12 million records and about almost 3 terabytes of data. Why now? Why now of all the times?
Well, they're getting ready to make people cry out for someone who is not corrupt to lead their countries.
Yep.
And to help them.
Yep. That's kind of what we thought. So, yep, there it is.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's it.
Man.
Oh, Lordy. Well,
we got about 2 minutes left.
2 minutes left. So. All right. Well, I think that's covered most of the important things that I want to discuss today. And
fantastic. And so allow me to take this 2 minutes. How's Holly? Holly, how are you? You doing okay?
I am terrific. Doug. All right. Thank you for asking. How's your lovely family?
Very well. Thank you. Very well.
And the four-legged?
Four-legged doing really, really well. Lady, she's spoiled and she knows it. But thanks for asking. And yours?
Well, she is just fine. She's ornery. You wouldn't know that she was 10. And she loves to go for her daily walks.
Terrific. And you know, that aids in sanity, doesn't it? Our four-legged friends really provide us with a level of sanity that two-leggeds can't. All right. Well, that'll do it. We're right on time in the outcome.
How many seconds have we got left?
I'll give you 15. How's that?
Oh, 15 seconds.
20.
All right. I gotta try to get this quickly. We had a dove fly into our patio door, into the glass.
Oh my.
And left an image there of a dove with its wings spread. And I'm just trying to get over and pull it up for you. I just snapped it just before. Okay. I'm going to have to share the screen for this.
All right.
And share screen. Where's the share screen?
Not going to work, I don't think. Oh, my brother, I'm sorry. Yeah, our satellite comms are going to cut us off.
All right. Anyway, it's a picture of a dove, just like in the angels.
Folks, go to standeo.com and check that out. We got to go. Have a good night. Thanks, Stan. Good night, Holly. Good night, everyone.
Good night.